Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome to Unorthodox Real. So today I'm actually going to be doing a totally different episode than what I usually do. So this podcast is usually meant for me to give, well, to bring people on and tell stories. But today I decided that I'm just going to do an episode on everything that's going on. It's not going to be more informational. It's more so solution based, because I didn't want to sit here and tell everyone about things that's going on in the world that people already know from watching the news or through social media and all that. So this is not that. This is just me talking about, as you can see from the title, it's going to be called Systemic Racism. Can it be dismantled? Okay. So first and foremost, my name is Relicious. I am going to be a second year Master of Public Health student. So a lot of the things I say are going to kind of be more tailored to public health because that's who I am in practice. I have a bachelor's degree in biology. So first and foremost, I want to acknowledge the lives lost in the past few months due to police brutality. Rest in peace to George Floyd. Rest in peace to Breonna Taylor. Rest in peace to Ahmaud Arbery. Rest in peace to Tony McDade. And rest in peace to Nina Pop. And rest in peace to any other person who I have left unnamed. And I want everyone who is listening to have a moment of silence for them. It's going to be like 10 seconds, okay? Here it goes. All right, guys, we are back. So, though all the people that I named, some people have their killers have been charged. Some people, their killers have not been charged. And like I said, this episode is basically on systemic racism. Can we dismantle it? So first, I want to acknowledge my friends who hit me up in the past week about all of this. Even though I did say that I didn't want to talk to anybody about this, people still did end up hitting me up, and I did end up talking about it even though I didn't want to. I was gonna name all y'all, but it was like 35 people once I counted, and I was like, nah, that's kind of OD. I'm not gonna name 35 people on this episode. But if you're hearing this and you hit me up, you are very much appreciated, because after this episode is over, I want anybody who is listening and wants to start a conversation with me to hit me up, bro. Let's get talking, okay? Because I have some solution ideas. I know I'm not the only one who has thought about this, but a lot of my friends have been asking me, what can I do? What can I do? And I was like, bro, let me just make a podcast so all of y'all don't come at once asking me the same thing. And then we can move on from what you learned. Well, not what you learned, but what you heard on this podcast. And then we can discuss and on the basis of your own practice. But I'll get to that later. Okay. So I split this into three parts. So the first part, guys, this is the first time me actually doing research for a podcast. I don't know how long this episode is going to be. I want it to be under 30, but we're going to see. But I split it into three parts. It's first part is, what is systemic racism? The second part is what certain organizations are doing to try to combat a certain area of systemic racism. And then the last part is, so what can we do now? So first off, like I said, I'm going to start with, what is systemic racism? So by definition, systemic racism includes the policies, practices entrenched in established institutions, which results in the exclusion or promotion of designated groups. So as you guys can see now, that what the current climate that we're living in, people are saying systemic racism in the terms of police brutality against Black people, and the designated group is Black people, institution, policing. So it can manifest itself into two forms: institutional racism and structural racism. So institutional racism is racial discrimination that derives from individuals carrying out the dictates of others who are prejudiced or prejudiced societies. Structural racism is inequalities rooted in the system-wide operation of a society that excludes substantial numbers of members of particular groups from significant participation in major social institutions. So one could say that systemic racism and structural racism go hand in hand because they, by definition, they kind of mean the same thing. But I want to talk a little bit more about the major social institutions that make up American society. So, social institutions are mechanisms or patterns of social order focused on meeting social needs, such as the government, economy and work, education, family, healthcare, and religion. So, as you hear that, you can understand that those social institutions can be broken down even further. Like in terms of education, we have Head Start pre-K, K through 12. We have university. We have postgrad, whether it be graduate school or professional school. We have vocational school. We have trade. So that can be broken down into different structures. In terms of healthcare, we have medicine, we have dentistry, we have public health, we have pharmacy, we have dental hygiene, we have optometry, we have, I don't want to exclude anybody, but I can't name them all, but y'all get the gist. In terms of religion, there's Christianity, there's Judaism, there's Islam, there is Buddhism. Like I said, I don't want to exclude groups, but you get the gist. In terms of government, there's the three branches of government. Then in terms of that, there's Congress, there's House of Reps. Then also, in terms of government, you have the people who are supposed to carry out the policies, like police, like firefighters, all that stuff. So y'all get the gist, okay? If you don't, do your Googles, guys. I've been saying that all week. Do your Googles. So like I said, the social institutions can be broken down further, but racism is structurally visible in every social institution. So, like I said, well, I don't think I said this yet. So, systemic racism is basically a byproduct of white supremacy, and racism can be found in every single group, in every single social institution, in every single subgroup of each social institution. So, here I'll break down a little bit in terms of each social institution. Some of the things that I'm saying, I broke it down in terms of its inception, like how it started. Some of them I did not say that. So it's a lot of stats heavy because I'm going to be an epidemiologist by training. So I like numbers. Yes. So in terms of who controls all the wealth in this country, white families hold 90% of the national wealth, while black families only hold 2.6% of the wealth in America. So for every $100 a white family earns, a black family will only earn $57.30. So in terms of unemployment, black people with college degrees are 2 times more likely to be unemployed compared to white people who do not have the same education status. So I like to bring that up because a lot of people feel like, no, the more schooling you have, the more opportunity you'll have. But systemically, that is not true, which is so messed up. The fact that you could literally have so many degrees and you'll still be at the bottom of the totem pole to a white man doesn't make sense, but that's how this country was built up. In terms of the education system itself, like I wrote in my notes, I said the education system itself is messed up. So in terms of K through 12, black children are 3 times more likely than white students to be suspended for the same infractions. And I saw this a lot when I moved from going to school in Detroit to the suburbs, because in the suburbs, mostly kids who you saw get suspended were black, even though they didn't really do anything wrong compared to the white kids. And I just thought that was, at the time, I didn't understand it. But now the older I got, it's like, bruh, it's really systemic like that. So in terms of the criminal justice system, Black people make up 13% of the population, but make up 40% of the prison population. Let me say that again. Black people make up 13% of the population, but make up 40% of the prison population. And you ask, huh, how can that be? It's because most of the time, Black people are being put in jail for minor infractions compared to white people. And it's so messed up. So as of 2016, 6 million people have lost the right to vote due to felony disenfranchisement. So a lot of people always forget, and they always, a lot of politicians bring up, the Black people didn't come out to the polls. The Black people didn't come out to the polls. If you have a felony charge due to some minor infraction that you had, you cannot vote. Therefore, you lose the right to vote. And then what? You can't vote. So saying Black people don't go out to the polls, well, maybe you should ask, why aren't they going out to the polls? Oh, maybe because they have a felony charge and they can't vote. Anyways, also, I have here that Black people are more likely to be to get longer sentencing than their white counterparts, and that is told to be true because you'll see minor infractions like a Black person gets pulled over for having, for example, drugs on them, and they'll get 25 years while a white person will get like a fine and have to do 50 hours of community service. Like, come on. So in terms of housing, which is under the family institution, the concept of redlining began in the 1930s when the Homeowners Loan Corporation drafted maps of American communities to identify which ones were worthy of mortgage lending. So in terms of housing, I felt like I needed to explain that more than just give stats. So neighborhoods were ranked and color-coded, and so the lower-rated neighborhoods were outlined in red because it housed many minority groups. Though redlining was outlawed in 1960, we still see the remnants of it today. So banks guided Black potential home buyers towards subpar loans, which led to Black people being shown 18% fewer homes and 14% fewer rental properties than white people. So a lot of people are like, why do Black people not own homes? Why do they live their life just renting, blah, blah, blah? And it's because the system literally makes it hard for Black people to get a loan to buy a house. Again, guys, this is systemic. Can't forget that. So in terms of healthcare, which is my practice of choice, studies have shown that 67% of doctors have a bias against Black patients. So I know a lot of the times when people think of systemic racism in healthcare, they always bring up maternal child health in terms of Black mothers dying in childbirth or infant mortality or preterm birth. But it's more than that. It goes down to certain physicians not understanding your pain level because you're Black. They think Black people are drug seekers. And also the sad thing is Black people are more likely to develop stress-related health issues that can lead to chronic issues later. So this is also how the biosocial ecologic model can basically kind of dictates how Black people operate in the world. So even though a lot of people are like, how does biology play a role in this? It's like, bruh, stress levels can really determine some of the chronic health issues that you have later on in life, which is so sad. So I'm at 15 minutes. I'm trying to keep this under 30 and I'm getting there. Okay, so I gave you all the stats. So like I said, public health is my practice right now. So racism is a public health issue. Once you think of racism as a public health issue, then you're gonna understand how all the social determinants of health are incorporated into how Black people operate today. So you can't just say, well, you can say racism is a byproduct of white supremacy, but also you need to understand that a lot of this is due to public health problems that America refuses to address. Okay, so like I said, racism is a public health problem. And so the American Public Health Association, APHA, that's how I'm going to call them until for further notice, APHA, because the real name is long. So APHA has been trying to identify ways to combat racism as a public health issue. So in 2018, the APHA actually adopted a statement in their annual conference in 2018, and a statement was written by the End Police Violence Collective. So this is a growing group of public health researchers, teachers, grad students, nonprofit leaders, and community organizers, and is rooted in the work of grassroots organizing against state-mediated violence. So the whole goal is basically to try to end police violence in America. So you ask, how do they want to do this? So I'm going to read their summary. Well, I'm going to read a blanket part of the summary. So the American Public Health Association recommends the following actions by federal, state, tribal, and local authorities. One, to eliminate policies and practices that facilitate disproportionate violence against specific populations, including laws criminalizing these populations. Two, institute robust law enforcement accountability measures. Three, increase investment in promoting racial and economic equity to address social determinants of health. Four, implement community-based alternatives to addressing harms and preventing trauma. Five, work with public health officials to comprehensively document law enforcement contact violence and injuries. So I want to talk a little bit about how they're trying to address promoting racial and economic equity to address social determinants of health. So funds disproportionately allocated to policing could be more effectively invested in social services to improve health, particularly in communities where historically rooted endemic of disinvestment has negatively contributed to health disparities. So this is what people mean when they say defund the police. Allocating funds to different services like mental health services, social work services, or any services of that nature could lead to better health outcomes for people, more likely minority groups, but for everyone in general. So that's what they want to do. And so strategies to ensure community safety without reliance on armed law enforcement. So also this goes to when people say, so if they defund the police, like what's going to happen to policing, blah, blah, blah. So although greater social and economic equity is likely to lead to higher quality of life for marginalized communities, interpersonal harm will still exist and strategies to ensure community safety will still be necessary. Alternative approaches can improve public safety without the harms associated with the system of policing. For instance, community-based violence intervention programs that detect and interrupt potential violent conflicts, identify and treat high-risk situations, and mobilize the community to change norms have significantly reduced homicides and non-fatal shootings in the urban neighborhoods with the highest number of incidents. These programs have had success employing violence interrupters and culturally appropriate unarmed street outreach workers. These interrupters have been able to diffuse potential harm or violent situation with no or minimal intervention by police. So we don't need them. Let's defund them, okay? It really has shown that, like, research has shown that having community-based programming has been able to reduce violence in certain communities. And so this is where I want to talk about that 8 Can't Wait program, that Campaign Zero that was started by a blue vest. I can't say his name because he be suing people if you say his name for defamation of character, which don't make sense to me, but here we are. So he implemented a program that identifies 8 policies that every police department can change. It wasn't until recently that I saw that they tried to incorporate abolition in the policy, but I think that was because of the backlash. But that's neither here nor there. But most of the police departments already abide by the 8 policies that they're requiring police departments to incorporate. And I just thought that was off-putting because even Lori Lightfoot, the mayor of Chicago, already stated that Chicago has implemented all 8 policies. So if we have a big city like Chicago saying that, it's like, bro, y'all still killed Laquan McDonald in 2016, probably with the same policies implemented. We're not going to get anywhere. So that's why we defund and allocate the funds to the community. So what do we do now? This is the part that I have been waiting for. Okay, guys, I think I can actually get this under 30 minutes. Okay. What can we do now? So a lot of my friends have been trying to ask me, what can I do? Like, I don't know what to do. How can I change it? This is where I tell what I've been telling people. Start with your institutions. Any institution that you belong to, whether it be a school, whether it be a job, whether it be somewhere you volunteer for, whether anything, start with your institution. Start with your ethos, your practice, and then we'll be able to use what you obtain from your practice and try to implement it in other places. For example, not one single person cannot fix every single systemic issue that we have in this country. You'll go mad. You'll never accomplish anything. So if you are in business, if you are in dentistry, if you are in medicine, or if you want to go into fashion, if you are a content creator, want to be a YouTuber, a blogger, or whatever, start with your institutions. Just think, what do I stand for? What do we stand for? Look deeper into your mission and values. If the statement that your institution sent to y'all about Black Lives Matter does not represent the what the institution is showing you now, think about, like, bro, they sent this, but this is not in their practice. Look into their mission and values and see, okay, yeah, they say that, but they never do any of that. And then bring it up. I personally think that I don't know where you could bring it up into your institution. It all depends, like, who you are comfortable speaking to. But we need to start with our institutions. If you are a content creator, start with what your ethos is. Are you producing content just for one audience? Do you feel like you give inclusive content? Though you posted Black Lives Matter all through your IG and all that on your stories, do you actually practice that in your when you are posting and creating content? If you answered no, then maybe you need to look at your ethos and your practice and understand, oh, maybe I need to be more inclusive because maybe a lot of people cannot relate to anything that I'm saying. I'm not saying change up your whole content, okay? I'm just saying that if you want to practice what you preach, you have to make sure that the people that you're trying to tailor your audience to, but the people that you want to include more of, they need to be seen more of, if that makes sense. So, like I wrote down here, like, ask yourself, what do you stand for and what does your institution stand for, the institution that you're a part of stand for? Also, my next point, no more band-aid solutions, guys. No more implicit bias trainings. literally you can research about implicit bias. You can research about implicit bias training and read that it has been proven not to work, because you know what it does? It brings awareness, but it doesn't really teach. And then you start to think, okay, you got trained in this. Now you have to ask yourself, maybe the people that are a part of this institution never actually wanted to carry out the mission and the value of this institution. So what's the hiring process like? What's the admission process like? Like, we got to think about things like that. That's why I wrote here, like, does your organization's mission and value align with the statement that they made in regards to Black Lives Matter and increasing diversity? You can increase diversity all you want, but there's the inclusion factor. There's an equity factor. You can bring on all the Black people you want, but will they feel supported? Will their voices be heard? Do you make space for them? If the answer is no, then maybe you're just doing it just to say you did it. We need to increase diversity in terms of making sure that people of color and Black people feel like they're welcomed. Also, there's that pull up for change campaign that's going on now. And I have here, like, are there Black people in your executive positions that have interest in bringing Black people into into that specific institution? Now, that Pull Up for Change campaign, I've been seeing, like, the beauty brands show off their stats and stuff. It's kind of disheartening to see how a lot of these beauty brands that are meant for Black people don't even have Black people in the rooms. So it really goes to show, this is where I go back, did they even practice what they preached in the beginning? A lot of these corporations need to look at their mission and vision and reevaluate it, because all this statement that you email to everybody means nothing. Nothing. If you're not gonna walk the walk after, man, it means nothing. So, in closing, I literally wrote, do you want to be a change maker? Do you really want to make change in whatever practice you're into? Do you feel like you can bring about change in whatever you do? Do you want to bring about change? Is that your why? Maybe, I know, like, everybody's why is different. Maybe some people don't care about their change, blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's cool. But do you want to bring about change? Do you want to change your ways? You need to be more conscious of everything that you do, every organization you are a part of, every corporation you're a part of. Because, again, I'm not saying these corporations make you who you are, but you got to understand that a lot of their practice does not identify with anything that Black people stand for, Black people are trying to change in this world. Therefore, I pose a question, can systemic racism be dismantled? I say yes, it can, if people want to do the work to dismantle it. Like I said, not one person will be able to do it by themselves. That's why I say every single person work within their institutions and their practice of life to make sure that the next generation will be able to say, wow, like, I feel included in this. Like, I see so many people that look like me in this. And then maybe one day we can be like, wow, systemic racism was dismantled. But it all starts with us at this moment. Every single person listening, it all starts with us. What are you going to do with the practice that you're a part of? What are you going to do? Okay, guys, I'm at 29 minutes. It's lit. Okay. So, like I said before, I didn't say this before. What am I saying? So I'm going to include links in the show notes to some organizations that you can sign petitions for, get knowledge This was all curated by Lindsay Archer. Shout out to Lindsay. I'll put the endingpoliceviolence.com website so you can read up more on what the APHA is trying to do. And again, I encourage everyone to try to implement change within their practice. It could be big or small, but just know we're trying to dismantle systemic racism, and we can do it if everyone within their own practice does the work. All right, y'all. Make sure you follow me on IG. It will be in the show notes. Make sure you subscribe to the pod. Make sure you rate the pod. Leave a review. Do what you want. I'll catch you in the next one. Bye.